listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, yes, living the dream once again on a fabulous Fox Football Saturday. Hartman and Schwartz with you. We are broadcasting live from the Farmers Insurance Fox Sports Radio studios. Call 1-888-FARMERS to switch, and you can save big on your auto insurance. Really the best thing you can do with your phone in a few minutes. Just call 1-888-FARMERS and start saving today.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
All right, we have a very busy Saturday, a couple hours with us as we get you ready for tomorrow's conference championship games. The Green Bay Packers hosting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Kansas City Chiefs hosting the Buffalo Bills. And, you know, Jeff, we're going to go back and forth and previewing the games tomorrow. We got a lot of NFL news to get to today, that is for sure. But at least on the surface, the one thing I would like to say about both of these matchups, because the weather is not going to be perfect, obviously, in either Green Bay or right. in Kansas City. I mean, these are – but it's not going to be a factor. And that's because, obviously, the Bills are a cold-weather team. And then when you look at the Buccaneers, even though they're down in Florida, they have a quarterback that knows bad weather after 20 years with the New England Patriots. So it's nice to have these matchups where even if it's cold or not exactly perfect conditions – it shouldn't have a major effect one way or the other.
Yeah, we don't want games of this magnitude to be affected by weather. Right now, we like, in my opinion, I like to watch. I play in these games, not this far in the playoffs, but I made the playoffs three times. I like outdoor football. I like football on grass, and I like football this time of year in cold weather. That feels natural for all those things to happen. And this weekend, we have cold in Green Bay, not a lot of precipitation, not a lot of wind. And then Kansas City, a little later at night, a little colder, a little bit of wind that might affect that game. Wind, Steve, more important to affecting a game than is... that is the snow or the rain, right? The wind is what affects the ball, the quarterbacks to throw. The rain, not so much. The snow, not so much. A lot of games in snow score a bunch of points for that exact reason. Everyone thinks, oh my God, no one's going to score. Not actually the case. So I like that there is not a snow game, a rain game. I went to the AFC Championship game 2 years ago now in 2018, Chiefs Patriots, my brother obviously on the Chiefs. And it was supposed to be early in the week. They were calling for like record low temperatures that night, like negative 10. And I freaked out about a bunch of stuff and ended up only being like 10 degrees out, not negative 10. And, but no precipitation. And there was a bunch of points scored and everyone was fine. So cold is okay. And I'm glad we don't have weather because I want these two teams, really four teams, I should say, to play at the maximum level they can with the surroundings of the game.
Right. And another factor that we rarely get in these conference championship games, there really are no upsets this weekend. The lines, normally in the NFL, if the teams are evenly matched, the home field gives you a 3-point advantage. The line on the Kansas City Bills game is 3, yeah. And the Green Bay Bucs line is 3.5. It opened at 3. So basically what they're saying is if the Buccaneers beat the Packers or the Bills beat the Chiefs, it's not a real upset. I mean, they just played better on that day. So you got very evenly matched teams, which is always good news. Obviously, the big news out of Kansas City all week has been the condition of Patrick Mahomes, and he has been cleared to play. The concussion is one thing. That toe injury is another. Before he went out with the concussion, and he was concussed. I don't know. They were trying to spin something else, man. He didn't know where he was at that point. But that toe injury, he was hobbling before the concussion. It was obvious that he wasn't 100%. And you say, well, Mahomes is such a gifted passer, whether he's in the pocket, outside of the pocket. But, yeah, if he's not able to run like he normally does to extend plays, you can't tell me that doesn't have a factor as far as the Kansas City offense is concerned.
I definitely believe that the toe is more important than the head neck injury. And it's interesting how the way this injury was discussed and, Mahomes, the concussion and, I think it's very clear he was woozy after the play, did not hit his head. It looked like some sort of whiplash neck injury. He wasn't choked out. That was such an awful talking point. It's not actually what happened. But he's back and playing, and you mentioned the foot. So I've asked around about the foot. I've had turf toe before. I've dislocated my big toe as well. So I know what foot injuries and how painful they can be. Most people think it's not going to be a big deal this weekend. I'm with you, Steve, though. I kind of think it is because it's his front foot, it's his plant foot. And Mahomes, if you look at the quarterback mechanics of the four quarterbacks playing this weekend, you know, it's like Brady, Rodgers, Mahomes, Allen. Allen Mahomes may be about the same. Allen's improved a lot this year. But Mahomes' mechanics can get a little bit off. And when they're a little bit off, he's just not as good. And if his foot's bothering him and his mechanics just aren't as good, he might miss one or two throws a game that he normally would have. And those one or two throws, obviously, can really hurt him and hurt the team if it's third and 13, for example, or third and seven, whatever that bad throw might happen. If it's first and 10, maybe not so much. So I do think that is a concern. This game, to me, Chiefs and Bills, has the most what-ifs. There's a lot of game plan, scheme, just like matchup things. The first game, I think, is very simple. And which one you want to start with?
Well, I tell you what, I want to start with the Kansas City game.
Okay, let's do that.
And the reason I want to do that is that when you look at three of the teams that are remaining, three of the teams have quarterbacks that have not only won Super Bowls, but have been Super Bowl MVPs. In other words, they have performed at the peak level in the biggest games. And then there's Josh Allen. Josh Allen is still the unknown quantity. The Bills are a good-looking team. They've only lost, what, one game out of the last 11 or 12 games, that on that miracle Hail Mary against Arizona. So they're playing well, but they only put up 220 yards of offense against the Ravens. Now, the Ravens have an outstanding defense, but the difference in that game was the Lamar Jackson interception that was run back 101 yards. Instead of a 10-10 game, they lose that game 17-3, the Ravens. So we still don't know yet. Even though Josh Allen is, if they had a most improved player in the NFL, he's got to be it. I mean,
it wouldn't be close.
I mean, it's unbelievable how a career basically 57% quarterback percentage-wise suddenly is completing 69% of his passes. But if it's a fourth quarter game and you're on the road, even though they don't have packed stands, we've seen already in these games, Arrowhead fans can make some noise. Does he have it? Can he bring the Bills back in the fourth quarter on the road if necessary? So that is the X factor as far as these two games. You know, Rodgers, Brady, Mahomes, we've seen it. They've done it. It's in the books. But the Allen situation is a different dynamic. And you just don't know until you've been put in that situation if he's capable. And by the way, that's not just for Josh Allen. That's for this Bills team, which is still a very young team. Perhaps maybe they'll be one of those teams. We might see many Chiefs-Bills matchups in the playoffs in the upcoming years. But until they've actually done it, we don't know.
No, we don't know. And we have seen at the end of the Colts game, for example, Josh Allen got a little loose with the ball, right? Remember, he fumbled the ball.
Yep.
He didn't really have an opportunity to do that in the Ravens game. But look, there's no doubt about it. The Colts outplayed the Bills. They outplayed the Bills, and they lost. It's the playoffs. It happens, right? The Ravens, you know, they're driving down to tie the game, and Lamar throws a terrible interception. But the Ravens, I mean, the Bills' offense didn't look terribly good in that game, right?
Right.
And so I think your question is very valid. I would trust the Chiefs, obviously, over the Bills. But there's a couple things, though, that worry me about the Chiefs. So here's what they are. And one of them is easy, which is red zone defense. They're 32nd in the NFL in red zone defense. We saw even last weekend, if Higgins doesn't fumble a ball, the Browns wide receiver, out the end zone, out the side of the end zone, which, by the way, I'm fine with that rule. I don't know why. Like, it's okay sometimes to have to give the defense an advantage. Like, he fumbled the ball. Don't fumble the ball. It's very simple. And I'm an offensive guy. Defense should get a handout every now and then. If Higgins scores on that, then the Browns would have converted on three of four opportunities in the red zone for touchdowns. This is touchdown percentage. The Chiefs are last in the NFL in the red zone. So if the Bills get the ball into the red zone, if they can move the ball, I think they can score some points here. Like, if you're the Chiefs fan, it's a little bit concerning. On the flip side, I believe since week 12, the Bills have the number one red zone defense. Even the first two games, Steve, they're 2 for 8 8 drives in the red zone now for the two teams they've played. Only 2 touchdowns. Now, you could definitely argue there's some regression to the mean there, right? It's not, they cannot keep up. They can't keep having field goals missed and throw a pick six and 2 turnovers on downs. But that does worry me. Here's the other one. And tell me if I'm wrong here. You've watched more football than I have, and I'd love to get your opinion on this. So the Chiefs would have the worst record against the spread to ever win a Super Bowl. Not ever, but in the last like 25 years, as long as they've been kind of tracking this stuff. And how does that? Why does that matter? And it matters because they don't like stomp on opponents' throats, right? When yes. opponents are bleeding, yep. they yep. don't like go for yep. the kill. I'll give you an example on Sunday before Pat Mahomes got hurt. Okay, so they're up 19-3 to start the second half, and you can even argue should have been 16-10, right? Higgins doesn't fumble the ball. The Browns get the ball at the 1 or 2, and they run another play, and the Chiefs go in the halftime 16-10. Okay, but it's not. It's 19-3. They force a turnover, go down. Kick a field goal. Out of halftime, Baker Mayfield throws an interception. Tyrann Mathieu picks off. Great play by the Honey Badger. Brings the ball into Chiefs territory, already Chiefs territory, into the red zone. If they score a touchdown there, Steve, we both watch a lot of football. It's 26-3. Browns are on the road, have never been in this spot with this team, and haven't been in this spot in a long time. Would you agree the game is virtually over right there?
Oh, look at it. This is what you're explaining here, Jeff, is something I've been saying throughout this entire season. And really, it goes back to what happened in the playoffs a year ago with the Chiefs. The ability to overcome double-digit deficits in 3 consecutive playoff games. Yeah. This idea that, you know what, we'll find a way. But all season long, this has been the Chiefs' ammo, where the jump, I mean, the Cleveland game was perfect. Forget 19-3. How about 13-0? I mean, the first 2 drives, boom.
But even that.
Or 13-3. But, I mean, so what they were able to do, they've been sitting on leads, and with the idea, the mentality, as you say, not putting teams away and letting them hang around with the idea that, well, if they do come back, we'll find a way, or Patrick Mahomes will find a way to pull the game out.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous.
Yeah, and to finish this example, so up 19-3. Becca throws the pick. If they score a touchdown there, game is over. 26-3, game is done. They go 3-and-out and miss a field goal. And it's like the interception didn't even happen. And you're like Chiefs, can we just please just finish a game for once? And I get it. 4th down, they're great. I'm not faulting them for that. But it shouldn't get to that. And so that's what I worry about in this game. The red zone and the Chiefs just not taking this someone to end a game. Are those fair?
All right, Jeff. On the other side, both these games are rematches from the regular season. So how much does it actually mean when you play a team a second time? What can you learn from the first games? We're going to illustrate both these matchups, Chiefs, Bills, Bucks, and Packers, how the first matchup could have a major effect on what happens tomorrow. Coming up next. Steve Harbin, Jeff Schwartz with you. We are broadcasting live from the Farmers Insurance Fox Sports Radio studios. Call 1-888-FARMERS to switch, and you can save a bundle on your auto insurance. All right, we're getting into the big matchups tomorrow. The winners will take on each other in Super Bowl 55. Show you along, Jeff. I don't remember watching Super Bowl 1, which wasn't actually called the Super Bowl.
Right.
I do remember watching Super Bowl II when the Green Bay Packers, Vince Lombardi's last game as the Packers head coach, defeated the Oakland Raiders 33-14. In fact, I had a little sheet of paper. Okay, so let's see. I was 9 years old, and I wrote down the scores from the 2 games, which were called the AFL-NFL Championship games. And the Packers won that game 33-14 over the Raiders. By the way, if you go back to what is now called Super Bowl I, the Green Bay Packers defeated the Kansas City Chiefs. And in the AFL Championship game for the Chiefs to get to the Super Bowl, or what is now called the Super Bowl, they beat the Buffalo Bills. See the symmetry here? So the Chiefs beat the Bills in the AFL Championship game and then went on to lose to the Green Bay Packers. So that's ancient history. Let's talk about what happened in 2020 and how it projects to these playoff games. I want to start with the Chiefs and Bills.
Okay.
So the Bills, you remember, got off the 4-0 start, and everyone's buzzing about the Bills. And then they played the Titans, and they got run over. The week after that, They're hosting the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs were coming off their loss to the Raiders. So both these teams came into the game with a 4-1 record. Buffalo's at home. And this game wasn't nearly as close as the final score. The Chiefs won this game 26-17, but total yards, 466 for the Chiefs, only 206 for the Bills. And the Chiefs ran for 245 yards on the ground. Edwards-Helaire had 161 yards rushing in this game, and Mahomes was near perfect, 21-26, 225, two touchdowns. Josh Allen was just 14-27, 122 yards in this game. So when you have a matchup, a rematch of a game that was very one-sided, even if it was early in the regular season, what kind of effect, if any, from your standpoint, Jeff, does that have on what the teams are going to do tomorrow?
So if you remember, the Chiefs and Bills played on Monday, right? They played that Monday afternoon game because the Bills had to go play Tennessee on a Tuesday because the Tennessee Titans had COVID. So a little weird scheduling thing there. So let's talk about why this game went down the way it did. So Buffalo said, we're not going to let Pat Mahomes beat us. Pat Mahomes threw for 225 yards. They played zone coverage. They didn't ask you this, Steve. How many times do you think Buffalo Bills pressured, sent a blitz to Pat Mahomes?
You tell me.
0 times.
Wow.
0 times. First time since 2016 they had not sent a single pressure in that game. They played what's called a light box. Almost, I think it was like 85% of the snap. So what a light box means, for those who don't know, it's basically if you have five blockers, five offensive linemen, they only have five guys in the box. And so it's light, right? There's one for one. A six-man box would be a stacked box, heavier box. And so the Chiefs took what was given to them, which was running yards, running lane. Hey, go, just run the ball. Do not let Pat Mahomes beat us. And look, it was 23-17. Mahomes had to complete a 3rd-and-13 to keep that drive alive. Otherwise, Allen has the ball back with 4 minutes left to try to win that game.
Right.
So I think the Bills will do the exact same thing this weekend. Exact same thing this weekend. Try to get home with four and try to stop the run with just the guys we have in the box. And if we allow 26 points, great, we'll score 27. On the flip side, the Chiefs pressured Josh Allen 15 of 31 snaps. They wanted to pressure him, get him off his game, get him off his rhythm. The Chiefs are really good defending the deep pass as well. They did not allow a deep pass in that game. They're one of the best defense in the NFL doing that.
Yeah, in fact, Stephon Diggs in that game had 6 catches for only 46 yards.
Yeah, and I know you love stats. Mm-hmm. So that was one of them for the Chiefs. They're just really good defending the deep pass. I think kind of both these teams are going to do the same thing, which is just kind of stay in front of everybody, right? Even if the Chiefs bring pressure, we're going to play our guys off, try to force Allen into turnovers, but not allow a deep pass. And I think we're going to see a lot of run the football this game. We're going to see a lot of basically time chewed off the clock. I like the under a lot in this game. I think we're going to see nearly identical game plans from week 6, which I think we're not going to see in the earlier game.
All right, so let's start our dive into the NFC Championship game, starting with the matchup they had earlier in this year. It was truly one of the most remarkable games of the regular season in the NFL. The Packers come in undefeated, and they're rolling along, and they are in Tampa, and the Packers get off to a 10-0 lead. So at the end of the first quarter, they're up 10-0. It's early in the season for this Buccaneers team, and they're still sort of trying to find themselves. And then the Bucs just go on this 28-0 blitz in the second quarter, and they go on to demolish the Packers 38-10. In this game, Aaron Rodgers was sacked 5 times. There were 8 tackles for losses for the Buccaneers, 13 quarterback hits. And, you know, in no way is Aaron Rodgers trying to sugarcoat what happened that day, other than the fact that we basically got our brains beaten in. I mean, the offense never got going. You're not going to see this Green Bay offense get shut out for 3 consecutive quarters, but it happened that day. So 38-10, does that help Tampa more going into this game, or does it help Green Bay going into this game?
It certainly helps Green Bay more in this game. So the reason why they played so well against this Packers offense is they pressured Aaron Rodgers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they pressured Aaron Rodgers, and he was not good against the pressure. 12 times under pressure 12 blitzes, I should say, only 3 of 12.
Yeah.
And he had a rough game. And so when you look at what the Packers can do this week, they watch that film and say, hey, look, they pressured us. Guess what? We'll have an answer for it this weekend. And so Tampa can say, hey, look, are we going to do the same thing that we did game one, even though they know we're doing that? You know, our theory that you have an answer for it. Or we do something else. Something else probably is not as ideal as the first time you played him and you played really well against him. And here's why I like Green Bay a lot in this game, by the way, is throughout the regular season, Aaron Rodgers obviously was pressured just more than that one game. The 16 games he played when he did not face the Tampa Bay Bucks, he completed 67% of his passes against the Blitz, 8.3 yards per attempt, 15 touchdowns, and a 123 passer rating. The passer rating is top five in the NFL in that situation. But against the Bucks, he has worst game of the year against pressure. So going into this game, Steve, I would take the regular season numbers, the guy we've seen through 16 games, not the outlier 17th game against Tampa. I think the Packers offense plays really well this weekend, and they throw for a lot of yards. Tampa Bay's passing defense is not that great. Their run defense is excellent. And I think the Packers take care of business.
All right, we'll get more into that game. And also, we got to get into trying to put some perspective on the career of Tom Brady, which is almost beyond belief on the other side. But first, let's find out what's trending right now. Mr. David Gascon, how are you, David?
I'm good. You're speaking about legacies and careers and resumes. I probably could have talked to you for hours before the show about one Hank Aaron. Baseball talk is one of those things just simply timeless. And I know, obviously, with the contemporaries right now, you don't have a real feel for the guys of years past.
Let me give you a quick. I had the opportunity to interview Hank Aaron a couple of times, and I met him in person the most recent baseball All-Star game at Angel Stadium. He actually showed up. We do a broadcast from a restaurant near the stadium, and he came in. We were up on a podium. He's climbing up. I mean, you know, he's approaching 80 years of age at that time.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Hank here. He was not someone that sought publicity, but he understood the responsibility of being Hank Aaron. He understood what being Hank Aaron meant to so many people, and he accepted that responsibility in terms of civil rights and everything else. Just a great gentleman. He had a great sense of humor. And as a hitter, I put it this way. He holds the all-time career total base record, which is a very significant record.
Yeah.
And it's not even close. Mm. Like, there's not even a close second place. So, and that amazing, as publicized as his career was because of breaking Babe Ruth's record, his career was actually better than that.
Yeah.
That's how dominant he was.
I just wish I could have seen guys like that. You know,
incredible.
Like, we were lucky to have Griffey,
yep.
Tony Gwynn. Like, those guys were monsters. Obviously, Bonds had two different careers, but I mean, yeah, Koufax, another one, obviously.
I actually got to be, when I was 12 years old, 1970, I went to a Dodger Braves game and I was sitting in the right field pavilion and Hank Aaron was in right field.
Mm.
There he was, the great Hank Aaron. So, yeah, it was a different era for baseball when baseball really ruled the sports world. And you cannot understate how major that event was when he broke Babe Ruth's record. It was incredible.
Now, I mean, because among the greats, you got to see him.
Yeah.
What about, like, guys like Mantle?
I saw Willie Mays play. Right. The year after, I went to a Dodgers-Giants game in 1971, and Mays was on the field. Mantle retired in 68. I wasn't quite into it as I was for Mays and Aaron. But, yeah, I mean, first baseball game I ever went to, Jeff, you ready for this? My dad, when I was 8 years old, took me to see Sandy Koufax pitch his last season with the Dodgers, beat Ray Washburn and the Cardinals 4-1. It's not like I remember the game, but, yeah, I remember everything about it. Beat Ray Washburn and the Cardinals 4-1.
And just think about it.
Yeah.
You talk about stadiums. Mm-hmm. You got Dodgers Stadium, Wrigley, and, of course, Fenway. Those are the oldest standing stadiums now that Yankee Stadium has passed on to a new Coliseum. But
I can only tell you this, working for the Raiders during the 1980s, how many stadiums I went to that no longer exist? There's a long list of stadiums I went to see NFL football games that are long gone.
Three Rivers comes to mind.
Well, they're tearing down the old Qualcomm. Yeah. It's being torn down right now in San Diego, bit by bit. Oh. So it's a goner.
Oh, man.
Yeah, hard to believe.
Guys, one quick note in the NFL. Dolphins hiring Central Michigan offensive coordinator Charlie Fry as their quarterback's coach. Major League Baseball, speaking of that, Red Sox have picked up Garrett Richards, signed him to a one-year deal worth $10 million. And also, George Springer makes it official today with the Toronto Blue Jays, 6 years and $150 million. On his brand new deal. College basketball, number 8 Houston won today, so did number 11 Creighton, but number 16 Virginia Tech got beat by Syracuse, and number 9 Kansas lost at Oklahoma, number 2 Baylor as we speak trailing Oklahoma State just by a basket. Providence and Villanova trailing at home 27-24, and Clemson getting beat up by Florida State 24-13. Guys, back to you.
All right, thank you very much, David. We'll talk to you a little bit later on. Once again, we are broadcasting live from the Farmers Insurance Fox Sports Radio studios. Call Farmers today for a quote. Well, tomorrow will be Tom Brady's 14th conference championship game. Now, let's put this in perspective. Technically, this was his 21st season, but in two of those years, he played one game. He played one game as a rookie in 2000, and then, of course, the season that was ended 2009 after one game. So he really has only played 19 seasons, and he's been to the conference championship game 14 times. In fact, on the other side, we're going to get into the retirement of Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers, in 15 years as a starting quarterback, played in one conference championship game. So, Jeff, as someone that played in this league, whose brother plays in the league, who has a longtime appreciation of the NFL, is there any way that you could put into perspective the idea that Tom Brady will be starting his 14th conference championship game?
No, I don't think there are words to even put that. You tried your best, obviously, with talking about Phillip Rivers and other players and how many years he's played. Tom has with the ability to win. It's what it is about Tom. Obviously, he's really good, but it's his 24/7 desire to be great. Like, it's not just during the season. It's not even just during the offseason. It's every waking moment he has, he spends preparing for football, whether it's February, March, October, December. And that drive, man, is just different than other players. Couple that with his talent and with, you know, playing on in New England for as long as he had. But this year to me is the most impressive because he came to Tampa Bay with no offseason program, right? Because we know this year did not have an offseason program. With a bunch of new toys, with a brand new offense, with an up and down first 12 weeks of the year. Then all of a sudden, the offense just turned on. It became, postseason time, became time to win games, and he just started playing better again. The whole offense started playing better again. Like, it's really remarkable how he was able to pull this off this year. This might be the most remarkable year of his career.
Yeah, and as we saw them beat the Saints this past week, and I think we all agree that it won't be long before Drew Brees makes it official that he's going to put a wrap on his career. Brady was, about 3 or 4 years ago, he said he could see himself playing until he was 45. We were sort of laughing him off. And even the last couple of years with New England, the numbers are coming down a little bit, but a lot of people have said, well, it's not Brady. He just doesn't have anybody to throw the ball to anymore. And now all of a sudden, he's got all kinds of weapons, greater than he actually had in terms of volume with New England. And he can see the results. And not only that, when you look at before and after pictures of Tom Brady from literally 20 years ago to today, he actually looks younger at 43 than he had at 20. And I don't know what's going on there. I mean, when you're married to a supermodel, she's got some secrets to, preserve the looks. I know he did a little work with his hair. I know that. This idea that this guy can just go on and on and on and on and on, which seemed, not plausible a few years ago. Why doubt this guy? I mean, if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you're like, all right, well, we got him for at least 2 more years. And who knows beyond that? It's crazy.
So I played with, I think, 4 Hall of Famers.
Mm-hmm.
3 for sure. No, 4, because I think Eli will be in. Mm-hmm. So 4 Hall of Famers. I played Steve Smith, who will be a Hall of Famer, Julius Peppers, Adrian Peterson, and Eli Manning. a couple things about those players that I think applies to Tom Brady. One is Hall of Fame players have a unique drive that no one else has.
Mm-hmm.
And that drive is typically matched with a body that can do what they want them to do at all times.
Right.
And now with the advancement of nutrition and rehab and prehab, right, kind of pre-injury, you know, you work your body to make sure it doesn't get hurt. Players just play forever. And Tom is going to be, he's going to go until he can't go anymore. Until maybe his family says, like, look, Tom, enough, man. Like, enough, dad. Enough, husband. Like, you've made your point. I think if he were to win one in Tampa, again, I don't think it's happening this year, I think he would probably feel good to pack it up. Because then it's very clear he's the best quarterback of all time. Like, I think he is now, right? Who's better than him?
Well, he has when you talk about comparing players, and I want to get into the Rivers situation. The bottom line is, when you say, who is the best player? Well, who has the best resume? Okay. I mean, there's always a lot of what-ifs out there. But when it actually comes to who has the best resume, Tom Brady, think about this. Although Breeze is still ahead of him regular season, he has 80,000. That's just a mind-boggling number. Brady will pass that next year. But when you include the postseason, Tom Brady has thrown for more than 90,000 yards in his career. And if he plays two more years, if he could hit two more healthy years, we're staring at almost 100,000 yards passing. I mean, it doesn't seem plausible. It's like a pitcher, right? There's only so many pitches in the arm. How many throws do you have in your arm? And remember, he played all those years in college at Michigan as well. So, like you say, you can talk about, you know, modern medicine and all the preventive measures that athletes can take to take care of their bodies as long as they're 100% committed to it like Tom Brady is. But you got to be lucky. You got to have pretty good genetics as well.
Yes.
And so that's, yeah, I mean, there is no argument, real argument, about who the most accomplished quarterback is in the history of the NFL.
Well, that's the thing about Hall of Famers. Like I said earlier, like, they're just different cats, man. Like, they just kind of have a combination of everything, and they put it to use. There's plenty of guys I've played with that could have been Hall of Famers that just didn't have the drive like Tom Brady does. But really, the advancements in training and technology, less practice time now, just allows a guy like Tom Brady to play till he wants to retire. I think that, again, I think they don't win this year, but I think they're next year, I wouldn't put it past them to be the favorite in the NFC.
By the way, you mentioned Julius Peppers. I will never forget the first time I met Julius Peppers. It was right after he declared to come out a year early out of North Carolina, where, remember, he also had played basketball. And we were in New Orleans covering the Super Bowl. It was right after 9/11. There was a lot of security in New Orleans in that early 2002. And they brought over this kid, Julius Peppers. It wasn't just that he was a giant man. His head. I mean, the only guy that I basically, Jonathan Ogden is the only person I'd ever seen quite like this human being, Julius Peppers.
He makes me look small.
I mean, you know, Ogden, I covered, I was a sideline guy his senior year at UCLA, and it was ridiculous watching him on the field. But Peppers was the same. Well, like, physically, it's like, okay, what am I looking at right now? But again, it's having those physical gifts and then the commitment to excel, which is why, obviously, Julius Peppers someday will also be a first ballot Hall of Famer. All right, speaking of Hall of Fame, on the other side, I want to get to this because Philip Rivers announced his retirement. And I want to get some insight from you, and I'll give some of my personal experience of Philip over the years, engaging whether or not what he did was enough to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We'll discuss that coming up next. Steve Harbin, Jeff Schwartz, broadcasting live from the Farmers Insurance Fox Sports Radio studios. Call 1-888-FARMERS, and you could save a whole lot of something on auto insurance. Well, one major story out of the NFL this week was the announcement that Philip Rivers is retiring after 17 seasons in the National Football League, the last 15 years as a starting quarterback. And during those 15 years, 14 with the Chargers, this past year with the Colts, he started every game. including the playoffs. That's 252 consecutive games. Only one quarterback ever has started more consecutive games. That's the Hall of Famer, Brett Favre. Now, this was a big story. Monday through Friday, I work in San Diego, Extra 1360, Fox Sports San Diego. And, you know, I've been in and out between the L.A. and San Diego markets for years, Jeff. And it's, which has always been an interesting dynamic for me, because it's two different environments completely. But one thing I know about San Diego is that they have an amazing allegiance to Philip Rivers, and he the same for them. In fact, he went to Kevin Acey of the San Diego Union-Tribune to break this story. So this was not a story that was fed to the national scribes. It wasn't, you know, Schefter, it wasn't Glazer, it wasn't any of those guys. It was Kevin Acey of the San Diego Union-Tribune that he called to tell him that he was going to announce his retirement for the NFL. So there's an amazing allegiance there. And when you bring up the Hall of Fame and Philip Rivers in San Diego, they don't want to hear it. I mean, absolutely, 100% Hall of Fame, no questions asked. Look at the numbers, fifth all-time in passing touchdowns, passing yards, completions, 8 Pro Bowls, great guy, 9 kids, same wife, the whole shebang. In their minds, this is not an argument. And then what I try to explain to them is that there's a committee that decides these things. Now, this year, Peyton Manning is going to be in the Hall of Fame in the first ballot. The discussion will last less than 10 seconds, right?
Correct.
They'll put his name up there and they'll say, next, let's move on. We're not going to waste time trying to argue, because we know that he's a Hall of Famer. My feeling about Halls of Fame may be different than yours, Jeff, but here's where I've always stood on Halls of Fame. First of all, there's way too many people in these Halls of Fame. But my argument is simply this. If I give you a name and you have to think about it, he's not a Hall of Famer. I mean,
love it.
To me, Hall of Fame means just that. You say Peyton Manning, yes. Tom Brady, yes. Aaron Rodgers, yes. Drew Brees, yes. But if I have to think about it and suddenly have to come up with an argument, then in my opinion, you're not a Hall of Famer. Your thoughts?
It's a great way to put it. I do not believe Philip Rivers is a Hall of Famer, but I think he has a chance to get in. Those are two different arguments, obviously.
Sure.
Here's the way I look at Hall of Fame. It's sort of the same way you do, but I look at, like, are you top 3 to 5 of your position for multiple years in a row?
Right.
I don't think he was ever when he was in the NFL. We look at wins and losses way more for quarterbacks than any other position. And, you know, we look at kind of the way games end and the way your seasons end, and they always seem to end with like a Rivers interception. And it's not fair. It's not always the case, right? But just, I know he was kind of a gunslinger. He took chances. All that was true. And I just, I don't think there's a strong case to put him in, other than he's liked and he's beloved in San Diego, and he played well for a long period of time. Everyone will say the passing yards. And Steve, we're getting to a point now where we talked about Tom Brady playing forever. All these players are playing much longer now in their careers, and they're going to compile stats that are more than their peers because of how long they played. Frank Gore is a great example of this. I don't want to get into that discussion now. That people get really angry when I say he's not going to be. I wouldn't put him in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
You know, stat compiling is not a Hall of Fame quality in the NFL. In baseball, sure. NFL, yeah. I don't think stat compiling.
Well, let me jump in, Jeff. Let me give you another name. So, Rivers is retired, fifth all time in passing yards. Assuming Matt Ryan can stay healthy for 2 more years, he's going to pass Philip Rivers. He's already 10th all-time or 9th all-time in passing yards. And he won an MVP award, and he did lead a team to a Super Bowl. So when I say Matt Ryan to everybody out there, you know, oh, yeah, he's Hall of Fame, I don't think so. I don't think people, but if you put Philip Rivers in, there's only 2 quarterbacks in the Pro Football Hall of Fame who played during the Super Bowl era that never played in a Super Bowl. One was Dan Fouts, ironically, of the Chargers, who broke the single-season passing yardage record 3 consecutive years, that record-setting Air Coryell offense, and was second all-time passing yards when he retired. And the other is Warren Moon, who obviously got a late start in his career, played 6 years in the Canadian Football League, where he won multiple championships and obviously a social significance as well. If Philip Rivers gets in the Hall of Fame, and I agree with you, I think he will, he opens the door for a lot of people. Matt Stafford,
yep.
Stafford plays five more years. Guess what? He could easily be in the top five passing yards.
I agree.
And you say, well, he played on bad teams. What did he? Hey, that's an argument. What if? Well, what if he had been on a better team? So Phillip Rivers, if he gets in the Hall of Fame, will open the door for a lot of quarterbacks that will have an argument saying, well, if he's in, I should be in.
I can't disagree with you. I've said this for a long time now, and I know we don't have time at the moment. We'll get back to this, but the Eli Phillip Rivers is the biggest discussion, in my opinion, of who's in the Hall of Fame, and maybe we'll get to that in an hour or two.
All right, so, yeah, we got a lot of that going on. Also, maybe a future Hall of Fame quarterback, Deshaun Watson. He has apparently made a decision on where he might want to play. We'll tell you coming up next. Oh, yeah, we're just one day away from the conference championship games to determine which two teams will face off in Super Bowl 55. It's Fox Football Saturday, Hartman and Schwartz, broadcasting live from the Farmers Insurance Fox Sports Radio studios. Call 1-888-FARMERS to switch, and you can save big on your auto insurance. It's really the best thing you can do with your phone in a few minutes. Call 1-888-FARMERS and start saving today. All right, much more
we
on these.
We are farmers. Bum, ba, da, bum, 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 bum.
Oh, I like that. Ooh. Okay, very good. I love that. By the way, one of my favorite things I ever did here when we were doing the national show here at Fox Sports was covering the Farmers Insurance Zurich Golf Classic. We did that three straight years in New Orleans, which is always an interesting. New Orleans is so unique anyway. You know, it's always a but when you have the for a golf tournament, so all 3 years we were, you know, we were there for several days doing the shows from the golf course, obviously, but also all 3 years we got to go out to dinner with some of the golfers and other people at Emeralds in New Orleans, and like he was like there, you know, Mr. Bang Bang Bang, you know.
Oh yeah, I remember.
Oh, the food.
The reason why.
So
it's the reason why I got into cooking.
I wish I could cook. I love eating. I'm an eater, right? I'm a foodie.
I'm both. I'm very good cooking food.
I really enjoy that. All right, we got a lot going on. I want to get to one story that is coming out here. I want to ask about Deshaun Watson's situation with the Houston Texans, and it really ties two stories in together. One, the fact that we have one coaching vacancy left, and that is the Houston Texans. And, well, let's go there first before we get to the Deshaun Watson situation. Obviously, much has been made of the Rooney Rule. And so far, there have been six hirings, five white coaches, and then Robert Saleh, who is Muslim, but no African-American hirings as far as the head coach is concerned. So is this a failure of the Rooney Rule? I mean, what's your perspective on what has transpired? Now, we don't know who the Texans, Jim Caldwell was brought in for an interview. It's interesting because McCown was brought in for an interview. He was just signed as a quarterback. They interviewed him as a head coach. Eric Bieniemy, obviously, is the big name floating out there among the minority candidates. He has also interviewed with the Houston Texans. But what do you make so far of these coaching hires around the NFL?
Well, look, when you have 70% of your league is African-American and only two of your coaches are, that feels like inequity, right? Like there's a problem there where it's just the coaching ranks are not represented by the players that play in the league. And there's always been this discussion for a long time. Well, there's just not enough minority coaches that coach the offensive side of the ball, but you got Eric Bieniemy, you got Byron Leftwich, you got Pep Hamilton, the quarterback coach, who did a great job in Los Angeles. I'm sure there's others that I've missed as well along the way, and they're not being hired, right? And to be fair, there were three general managers this year out of seven that were hired. They're African-Americans. That's a good start there on the executive side because it all has to be better. And so you can't make that excuse anymore that the coordinators aren't there, right? Because even on the defensive side of the ball, Leslie Frazier this weekend, who's calling the game, Todd Bowles, who's calling the defensive plays for Tampa Bay as well. So there's plenty of options. Look, and like a guy like Jim Caldwell, man, like I play with Jim Caldwell. He's fantastic. He should be a coach in the NFL. I know he interviewed with the Texans, but a lot of people talk about Eric Bieniemy, and it's interesting to me because obviously he coached me in Kansas City. My brother plays in the Chiefs now. And, you know, he's interviewed now for three straight years on teams.
15 interviews, I think, he has done totally.
Somewhere around there. And so something else is happening, right? Because if you interview with half the NFL and half the NFL decides to not hire you, even with the glowing reviews of Andy Reid, of Pat Mahomes, like something else is happening, right? And I don't know what that is. And I'm acknowledging there obviously is a problem with the NFL hiring minority coaches. But I don't know if that's the issue here, Steve, because again, he's there with 15 teams, and I'm not even sure he's been a finalist for any of these teams. And I people ask me all the time because of the relationship I have with the Chiefs. You know, what's going on there? I go, I don't know, man. Well, I've heard the same thing everyone else has heard, but I don't know. I mean, the Eagles just hired a coach who they was on vacation. He didn't even know he was going to be up for an interview, and he interviewed in like his casual clothes because he wasn't even certain he was going to have one.
All right. Here's the thing about Bieniemy. Now, what's interesting, obviously, is that his two predecessors as offensive coordinators with the Chiefs, Mike Nagy and Doug Peterson, got jobs.
That's no play calling thing is silly.
But I remember when Doug Peterson was hired by the Eagles, it was universally panned. I mean, everyone's like, are you kidding me? He has no impact. That's Andy Reid's offense. What has he done to earn a coaching position in the NFL? And 2 years later, he's won the Super Bowl and he's outcoached Belichick in that Super Bowl game.
Yeah.
So I always go back. Bieniemy had some legal issues going back to his college days and shortly thereafter. And, you know, there's some DUIs and stuff like that. But there was that one incident back in 1993. He was arrested in Boulder, Colorado for allegedly harassing a female parking attendant. And he put his hands on her and talked about what a nightmare it must be to be, she said, quote, a bunch of black males all at one time. And then, of course, he took his pants off, urinated nearby, whatever it may be. I mean, this is almost 30 years ago. But you know as well as I do that in this day and age, if you're suddenly put in a position where the spotlight's on you as being a head coach in the NFL can be, that all of a sudden people, you know, dig in. They're like, oh, so what exactly happened that day? And you have to explain yourself. I can't think of any other reason. I mean, the credentials are there. These are incidents that happened, you know, 100 years ago. Whether they're still being held against Eric Bieniemy or teams are hesitant to hire a guy with something like that on his resume.
And I get coaches and players are different.
Yeah.
But we give players second chances all the time.
Of course.
And Eric Bieniemy has had 30 years now of no incidents, right? And he's been a great coach in Kansas City. Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes, everyone who's played for him, vouches for him. And so, you know, we've heard the same things, right? That doesn't interview well and not prepared for interviews. I mean, there's a difference between, I want to make this clear because I think people are kind of confusing this. So if we called him right now and interviewed Eric Bieniemy, he would do great in our interview. That's not a job interview, right?
Right.
So there's a difference between, you know, at the podium, and Eric's great. I'm not debating.
All right.
That.
Well, Jeff, I'm going to put you in an owner's seat right now. All right. Yeah. So who knows? Maybe someday Jeff Schwartz will own an NFL team.
I'd rather not. Even if I did not win the Mega Millions last night.
All right. So somebody else won that $1 billion, cashing out for $700 million, which isn't bad. All right. Let's say you're sitting down and interviewing head coaching candidates. What are you looking for? What do you want to hear in an interview from a head coach that would set them apart from the other candidates?
Okay, a couple things at play here. One is how willing is your ownership going to be on letting the coach do what he wants to do? Because I think some of these hires, the hire in Philadelphia, very much feels like a guy we can control, okay? That's a big part of this, right? Now, what I would want, I would give the coach autonomy to do what he wanted, is a plan for building the roster. A vision for how you want your, and not just like, we want to be physical. I don't want that. A vision for how you're building the roster. Like, what's your, what type of players do you want at certain positions? I remember I was in Detroit, and it was the first time I'd really talked to my offensive line coach in depth about roster building, because I was the oldest guy on the offensive line room. We kind of got close. And he said that Jim Caldwell, the coach at the time, they worked with the scouting department pretty well. And They wanted specific, like, I want my left tackle to do this. I want my left guard to do this. I want my center to do this. And so the offensive line coach had to have like a manifesto, essentially, of like, I want my guys from the scouting department. I want you to find these five type of guys. And I think that's what I'm talking about with just like, hey, here's the guys that I want on my team. Here's how I want to build my team. Here's what offense I want to run. Here's what defense I want. Here's the coaches I think I can hire. Here's how I want to run my offseason program. Here's how I would handle this situation and that situation. And, you know, I don't know if they watch film. I know at the coordinator level, sometimes they watch film together and they go over situations and game situations and what they would do. And so all of that, in my opinion, is part of what is an NFL job interview. Now, again, there's different levels of this, right? Some places will say, hey, Urban Meyer, you probably have more control over the roster than the new coach in Philly does, who I didn't even know existed until he was hired.
Sirianni, you never heard of the guy.
Yeah, Sirianni. And like I said, he's a guy that feels very much like Eagles front office can control him.
Right.
So that's the interview part. And it's still, it strikes me as very odd that after 15 interviews, Bieniemy doesn't have this information ready to give to teams. And like so. Again, I don't talk to owners. I don't talk to general managers. I don't know why he's not hired. It baffles me. It really does.
Well, and again, since he was working with Andy Reid, if indeed the interview process, and I agree with you, I don't, there's got to be more to it than that. I mean, if you've done 15 of these interviews, I'm sure he's sought advice, right? You go to Andy Reid and saying, you know, something's happening where I'm not saying the right things in the interviews. What should I do? I mean, it does seem to be a mystery. All right, on the other side, I want to get to this Deshaun Watson story because this is really big. I mean, this could change the dynamic of the National Football League if the Texans actually do deal him. And now there are reports, if he is dealt because he has a no-trade clause in his contract, there is one team that may surprise you that he would love to play for. We're going to tell you who that is coming up next. Steve Harvey, Jeff Schwartz, Fox Football Saturday. Tomorrow's the day. Super Bowl 55 right around the corner. Just to take a moment here, it really is remarkable, again, what the NFL has accomplished.
Oh, yeah.
I think back to the very beginning of the season. We were watching problems in Major League Baseball. We had the bubble situation in the NBA. And I'm thinking, so the NFL is going to do this without a bubble? How in a contact sport with as many people that are around a football organization are you going to pull this off? I mean, we were like, there's going to be games canceled. They're going to have to extend the season. There's just no way. With all the travel and everything else, plus, you know, going back to September, projections were it was going to get a lot worse, which it did. And yet here we are. We're at the Final Four. We're talking about these games like we would any other NFL season. No difference at all. All of this while all hell's breaking loose everywhere else, and yet the NFL has pulled this off. Is there anything that we can stand back and learn from how the NFL navigated this? That could help the rest of us?
Yeah, when you want to do something, when you want to get better, when you want to not fix COVID, but test, contact trace, quarantine, follow the rules, that you can do it. You can do it. You can have a life with following the rules. And NFL put together guidelines and rules, and they followed them. They were strict with the rules. They consulted doctors. Not YouTube videos, and they put together a plan that worked. They adjusted with new news, right? I mean, people think that you just have one plan. No, they adjusted as news dictated, right? As new information was presented to them, they adjusted, and they got through it. And they put their money into it, their time into it. Everyone deserves credit. All the employees, the players. For making sure that they do their part off the field, even the spouses that, you know, that have to maybe sacrifice some of their fun this year to stay at home, to not get sick, so they don't pass it to their husbands. They all did a great job, and they deserve a lot of credit for doing it.
It's unbelievable. I mean, think about it. We had a 60-game baseball season. We had an NBA season interrupted, a cancellation of the NCAA March Madness. We had a college football season that was all over the map as far as teams playing games. and you will look at the 2020 season 20 years from now, and it looks no different than any other season. Full games, everybody played. There was no change.
Yeah,
we literally end up with teams that we expected to be there at the beginning of the season. Yeah. None of these teams are surprises, especially the Bucks-Packers game. A lot of people, after Tom Brady was acquired by Tampa Bay, predicted that we could have a Battle of the Bay. So it's just like where everything else, you know, golf, tennis, they had to postpone and cancel. Nothing. The NFL played a full season as scheduled. Few games were postponed, but they still got all the games in. And here we are to a Final Four that everyone's looking forward to.
And I think, if I remember wrong, only two quarterbacks this season missed a game for COVID. Cam Newton and Lamar Jackson.
Correct.
So, like...
You have the Denver situation where the whole quarterback...
Right.
They lost all their quarterbacks. But you know what? The NFL said, hey, you know, it was the contact tracing situation. They were all in the same room. And they said, we're not changing the rules for you.
You have no quarterback.
So they brought up a wide receiver from the practice squad to force the quarterback. All right. Speaking of quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson. All right. So the Texans are trying to figure this out. You do not want to be given up on a 25-year-old quarterback who, by the way, now qualifies for the all-time career passer rating, second all-time right now to Patrick Mahomes. He is a star. He deserved his Pro Bowl, even though he was 4-12 this season. As a team, they were 4-12. And so a lot of teams are being mentioned, but there are people inside that are putting it out there that know Deshaun Watson, who has not publicly asked for any trade. He's upset at the organization. That is public. But the one team that a lot of people thought he may not want to play for, because he does have a no-trade clause, is the New York Jets. But Robert Saleh has changed all that because he was a guy that he really felt would have been a good fit for the Houston Texans. Now, Saleh, of course, obviously being a defensive coach, but he apparently would be okay with that. And that would be great news for the Texans. I'm not so sure that if the Texans handled this right, even in getting rid of Deshaun Watson, that they couldn't come out with a bonanza. I mean, we're talking about... they would get the second overall pick. Here's what I would ask for. You have two options here. First of all, you're getting a minimum of three number ones. Second overall pick, they have two picks in the first round, the Jets. I'm taking both of those this year. And your number one picks the next 2 years. Or you're giving me Sam Darnold. Because the Jets could figure, well, we could then shop Sam Darnold, maybe try to get some of those picks back. But if you're the Texans right now with Miami in the wings, who knows, New England might be interested.
Yeah.
How about the 49ers? Think they like to have Deshaun Watson as their quarterback? You could get multiple offers on the table. And if you play it right, you could get yourself a bonanza. Because even with Deshaun Watson, as great as he was this year, they were 4-12. So he's not the only problem you got on that team. So what is the right situation, you think, moving forward right now for the Texans?
So we saw the report, I think it was today or yesterday, that said that he would consider the Jets and the Dolphins, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just so happens those two teams have the most to offer the Texans.
Yes.
It's weird how the report gets out that Deshaun would go to the two places the Texans want him to go to.
Yes.
That report was put out by the Texans, guys. Like, that is a report put out by the team.
Well, the Jets have the second pick, and the Miami obviously has Houston's pick, which is the third
pick.
But
it's not even – but it's more than that, Steven.
Yeah.
You just mentioned it, right? They have multiple first-round picks.
Multiple first-round
picks. Multiple second-round picks.
Yes.
Multiple first-round picks moving forward. And they would be able to trade what should be the biggest haul ever for a quarterback. Guys,
ever.
Deshaun Watson is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yes.
I think we look at his record – I'd say, how can someone who's so good have his team be so bad? Did you guys watch the Texans this year? The only reason they even won four games was because of Deshaun Watson. He is marvelous. He is so good. And I think if you were doing just a pure, like, heading into 2021, and you had the first pick is Pat Mahomes, the second pick would be Deshaun Watson. Every team in the NFL would take him second.
That's right.
He's that good. So this would be a monumental trade. And unlike the NBA, everyone says, oh, James Harden from Houston left and went to the Brooklyn Nets. There's a little bit of a difference here. So NBA is a players league, right? And we know Harden basically sabotaged himself, right? He just played terrible. I remember one of the passes he threw, he just like threw like 20 feet away from someone, just in anger, disgust. He looked out of shape. Deshaun Watson won't do none of that. If he shows up, he will play as hard as he can, and he will play well. So his leverage is making this messy, right? Going to the media, tweeting about it, not showing up to camp this year. And the Texans will be interesting. Look, new GM, new head coach, eventually someone. You know, Deshaun Watson obviously is a big asset to have if you're a new coach there, but maybe it's like, hey, we'll just start over. We're starting over. We're going to get more draft picks. They have like no draft picks this year, right? Because they traded away
all
the draft picks. So I think that they're going to trade him, but only if they get the package they want.
All right, well, let me ask you about the Jets. Would you want Darnold? Would you want Darnold in trade? Yes. You would take Darnold because, again, you would have the second overall pick in the draft. But do you, if you're the Texans and you look at Darnold and say, again, a couple of years ago, this guy was touted by most as the most talented quarterback in that draft. And under a new environment, and again, this is a team that was in the playoffs the last couple of years before this disastrous 2020 season. Or would you take a first-round pick, another first-round pick, instead of Darnold?
I think you can do both. You can take Darnold and also draft a quarterback.
Really? So you would use the second pick. Who would you take on the second pick? Would you take Zach Wilson or would you take Justin Fields?
Probably Justin Fields. Again, I'd be fine with keeping Sam Darnold and waiting until next year.
Right.
But you can do both. But I think if you do trade for Sam Darnold, you're doing so with expectation he's your quarterback next season.
Right.
And then with the second pick, you can take, you know, for the Texans, probably not Penei Sewell.
Mm-hmm.
Who would be that high? I think actually you would just trade out of that pick and get even more draft picks.
Sure.
So I think it's definitely doable. NFL players don't have a lot of power, though. I mean, they could say Deshaun could say all he wants, and the Texans would be like, "Oh, oops, never mind. You're under contract. We're going to keep you here." And when, look again, they know he's going to play hard because NFL players play hard. Like you can't not play hard.
Well, this guy's a winner. I mean, you go back to his days at Clemson, the games he played against Alabama his last 2 years. Please, I mean, Nick Saban had no answer for this guy, none. And he just turned 25 in September.
I know. He's so young.
He just turned 25. There's never been a quarterback of this caliber. Again, you have to have 1,500 career attempts to place on the all-time list as far as passer rating. He has that, and right now it's Mahomes 1, Watson 2. He is now ahead of Aaron Rodgers.
He's that good.
He is that good. Unbelievable year he had this year. All right, on the other side, we're going to get back to the games tomorrow. Ah, yeah. We got some matchups, that is for sure. But first, let's find out what's trending right now as we bring on Mr. David Gascon once again. So how about you, David? Would you trade Watson if you're the Texans or say, hey, Deshaun, you're going nowhere?
Yeah, there's no chance I'm trading Deshaun Watson. They have issues, and you mentioned it. He had a monster year, and the record was awful.
It's amazing. He had 33 touchdowns, 7 picks. He led the league in passing yards, 300 a game, 70% completion rate, and they were 4-12.
Yeah,
how's that possible?
I don't know, but the defense sucks. Yeah, the defense is awful. And then on top of that, you get rid of arguably the best wide receiver in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a whole culture thing there, right?
How he put up those numbers without DeAndre Hopkins are remarkable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate. But the bigger question is what do you do if you're the New York Jets?
If I'm the Jets, I am offering everything for Deshaun Watson. I don't care what you want. We'll give it to you.
So would you be comfortable if you're running Houston to take Darnold?
That's why I asked Jeff on this one. I don't know where we stand on Sam Darnold. I really don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never been as enamored with Sam Darnold as a lot of people were because he does make some spectacular plays and he makes some really dumb plays.
Yeah.
And that has carried over into his NFL career. So
it's true.
Yeah.
No Clay Helton around though. Guys, college basketball today. Number 2 Baylor was down by 4 at the break, but pulled away in the second half to take care of Oklahoma State, 81-66. Minnesota gets upset at home by Maryland, who's just 9-7 on the year, 63-49. Villanova by 3. By 12 on Fox right now, 52-40 is the score in that one. Clemson getting blown out by Florida State. Seminoles up 58-28. This ball game in the second half. Ohio State and Wisconsin just underway. UCLA and Stanford will tip things off in about 30 minutes from now, along with Alabama and Mississippi State. Meanwhile, in the National Football League, Charlie Frost Fry is the new quarterback's coach of the Miami Dolphins. He comes from Central Michigan as the OC there. Jimmy Butler is going to be out in today's game against Brooklyn and also on Monday because of COVID-19 protocol. And Garrett Richardson's a one-year deal with the Boston Red Sox. He'll be making $10 million for the upcoming season. Guys, back to you.
All right, thank you very much, David. Once again, we are broadcasting live from the Farmers Insurance Fox Sports Radio Studios. Call Farmers today for a quote. We haven't really delved into Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, for the first time, will be hosting a conference championship game.
Oh, yeah.
Never done that before. And, of course, last year they lost the NFC championship game. It's been 10 years since he won his one and only Super Bowl, played in his one and only Super Bowl, leading the Packers to a championship back in the day. And you look at his numbers, arguably his greatest season ever. 48 touchdowns, 5 picks this year.
Uh-huh.
A couple of years ago, he'd been hurt. The things were turning sour with he and Mike McCarthy. All of a sudden, they go, Matt LaFleur. Everyone's like, who's Matt LaFleur? Well, he's pretty good. whatever Matt LaFleur is selling, Aaron Rodgers is buying right now. But I want to go next step. I mean, we were talking earlier about Tom Brady, no question, the most accomplished quarterback in the history of the NFL. When you look at Aaron Rodgers and the sum of his career, we hear this a lot about Aaron Rodgers. He may not have had the greatest career. Brady's numbers are better. But this is the most talented quarterback. Like, this guy can do more things as a quarterback than arguably any quarterback that's ever played the game. So when you, because you break this all down, you watch these guys. Yeah. When you look at Aaron Rodgers, what stands out to you? And if you were trying to make the argument that he offers more from the quarterback position than anyone else, what exactly sets him apart?
Well, he's got excellent arm strength, which is obviously very important, especially when you're playing outside in the cold a bunch in Lambeau. And the anticipation of what's about to happen, and it's the mental processing, right? I mean, remember that clip from last weekend where he was smiling because he was just like, he just knew that the touchdown was coming? That's what I'm talking about. It's mental processing. It's not just that he can throw the ball. Josh Allen can throw the ball, right?
Right.
It's mental processing. It's being able to process what he sees in front of him and make his body do what he wants it to do. And then obviously you have the ability to scramble and move in the pocket and make late in the down throws and flick of the wrist accuracy, all those things. But specifically to this season, what's made him so much better is he's following the offense this season.
Mm-hmm.
He's not doing what he wants to. He's not freelancing. He's not changing plays. He's not you know, obstructing the offense. He's doing what the coach asked him to do. More play action pass here. 10% more play action pass. More motion this year. More formations. More under center. Just trusting the offense. You have watched the Shanahan offense for years, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've seen now it's in L.A. I can't even name all the places now. Minnesota, and it's in all the places escape me, but it's in like 6 or 7 places right now, right? And that offense typically takes an average quarterback and makes him look above average, right? It's a very quarterback friendly offense. This is the most talented quarterback to ever play in this offense. I think it's not even close, right? I mean, you say John Elway at the end of his career in Denver, but John Elway wasn't the same player he was when he was 24 with Shanahan, right, at the end.
Yeah.
This is the most talented. So there's no surprise that he's playing well, but the surprise to me is that he bought into everything. And now that he's bought in, they're pulling the best talent out of him and out of this offense. And they torched the Rams last weekend. The Rams have the number one pass defense in the NFL.
But Aaron Donald, let's be honest about that. I mean, I don't know if it would have made a huge difference, but obviously when Aaron Donald is not there, the Aaron Donald we know, that changed a lot for the Ram defense. I mean, it may have shown you once again just how valuable Aaron Donald is to that Rams defense, because without an effective Aaron Donald, of course, the big thing about the Packers last week, they just ran it down the Rams' throat. I mean, they ran the ball. Yeah. I mean, they came out running the football. and Aaron Donald ineffective, and the frustration is, you know, he didn't have a tackle in the game. I don't know. It's you know, you were very steadfast early on, Jeff, talking about, the Packers are going to win this game. By the way, we're broadcasting live from the Farmers Insurance Fox Sports Radio studios. Call 1-888-FARMERS to switch, and you can save a bundle on your auto insurance. He's lost his last three conference championship games. The only time he ever won one was the year they went on to win the Super Bowl. So what makes you so confident that it's the Packers' turn to get back to the Super Bowl?
Well, I think the best team in the NFL right now. They're playing the best. They have that Super Bowl championship feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But I think specifically in this game, so Tampa this year has been two winning teams. The Saints last weekend and Green Bay in week six. In those games, they're plus six in turnovers. That means they have six more forced turnovers. They have forced turnovers than they've given up. And they were plus four last weekend, I think plus two. So they didn't even turn the ball over in any of the two games they beat against winning teams. Aaron Rodgers has five interceptions all season. Two of them are against Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
So if their offense, Tampa's offense, doesn't get a short field to start after turnover, they're not as good. Even last weekend, right? Without a turnover, they had three field goals. And I think like four punts at the end of the game with the ball. So I don't expect Green Bay to turn the ball over a lot. And that will limit them as well. Here's some other things to note. Green Bay is the best first half team in the NFL. They have the most points on average in the first half of the NFL. And the third best first half defense. Tampa Bay is to like 20, I have it right here, 21st in defense in the first half. So Green Bay is going to get out to a lead, in my opinion. And they can kind of just coast. They've had this season the most time spent in the fourth quarter with the highest win percentage. So they've just kind of coasted the inning, and they're still blowing teams out. So I just think it's a really tough matchup for Tampa. Antonio Brown is now out as well. I think Green Bay is just hot, playing well. I'd take the Packers.
Wow. We all had to make our picks here. At Fox Sports Radio for at the start of the playoffs. By the way, I had Seattle winning the NFC at the beginning of the year. I had a Seahawks beating the Chiefs in Super Bowl 55 before the season began. But before the playoffs, I changed my tune and I went with Green Bay. So I went with Green Bay and Kansas City, the 2-1 seeds, to get to the Super Bowl. And I'm a big symmetry guy, and I'm like, this is going to be Super Bowl I. Green Bay's going to come out on top. Aaron Rodgers. If he does win the Super Bowl, let me ask this. If he does win the Super Bowl this year, if they run the table and you say they're the best team in the NFL and he wins another Super Bowl, where do you rank him? I mean, if Brady is one, is there Montana? Is there Peyton Manning? Where exactly in your lexicon of quarterbacks would another Super Bowl victory place Aaron Rodgers?
So I am not a big fan of ranking players. I much rather tier players, right?
Beginning right.
That, I think it's our, oh, is Aaron Rodgers better than than Peyton Manning? I mean, I don't know. I think Aaron Rodgers is a tier one NFL quarterback all time if he wins this week.
Well, how many quarterbacks are on your tier one?
It's like probably Montana,
yeah.
Brady,
mm-hmm.
Manning, Rodgers.
Brett Favre. Okay. So you would rank Rodgers ahead of Favre. Well, no. What did I tell you earlier? If you have to think about it, he's not.
Well, part of it is I just listed all the guys that I physically saw play.
Right.
It takes me a second to think about. I mean, Rodgers, Favre had the three MVPs right in a row. He played all the, I think Rodgers is probably better.
Right.
He didn't win as many. Only one MVP this year, have his third. Brett Favre won one Super Bowl. Favre will have two if he wins this year.
Sure.
I'm trying to think of who else. I mean, Dan Marino was always tough for me because Dan Marino, played before I watched a little bit of him play.
Well, where do you do Breeze? Where does Breeze sit for you?
So they've only won, since 2009. They have not won more than two playoff games in a single season.
Correct.
They've now lost three straight times in the playoffs as home favorites.
Mm-hmm.
They've scored between 20 and 23 points in the last five playoff games. Those stats kind of knock me off Drew Brees as being like, He's so accurate, though.
Well, I mean, we're talking about a guy that broke the NFL record almost four straight years for a completion percentage.
I would say he's still in, I would say he's in the bottom of tier one, but he deserves to be there. Tier one probably feels too big for me. Mm-hmm. I actually need to write this down.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I got a quick stat for you. I know you like
modern quarterbacks. They're mostly modern quarterbacks too, which kind of upsets me because I'm sure there's other ones that deserve it.
How about this? You ready for this? So you talk about accuracy. A lot of people make a lot out of accuracy. What's your completion percentage? So again, based on 1,500 career attempts, right now as we sit here, this is based on regular season. The most accurate quarterback ever, Deshaun Watson, 67.8. Breeze, 67.7, and a lot more attempts, obviously, than Watson.
Right.
Third all-time is Kirk Cousins, 67%. Fourth is Teddy Bridgewater. And fifth, and he was the record holder for many years, Chad Pennington. So is accuracy a little overplayed as far as just pure completion percentage when I start throwing out names like that?
No, because I think that the way Breeze kind of navigate his offense kind of sets him apart from like Chad Pennington. I mean, he's thrown the ball 35, 40 times.
Right. Well, certainly in his heyday, not last couple of years.
But. Right. So like that's part of it too. I mean, it's a passing game, and to succeed at that level is pretty it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, when you lead the league in completion percentage six times and also lead the league in yards per game six times.
Oh, it's incredible.
That's an incredible mix there in that Hall of Fame career of Drew Brees. All right, we're going to make our selections coming up. Which two teams will face off in Super Bowl 55? We're going to tell you coming up next. Steve Harbin and Jeff Schwartz, want to thank the guys today. Iowa Sam sporting his Wayne's World cap today.
Yes.
What was the occasion for that?
You know, I just randomly asked my girlfriend for Christmas, I want a Wayne's World hat.
Really?
Yeah. And she found
a
great
fan of Wayne's World back in the day?
Oh, it's my gospel. It really is.
Really?
Same with The Simpsons. And Jeff and I were talking about The Simpsons.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Early 90s, man. It's a jam.
See, I go back to the original Saturday Night Live. Debuted when I was a senior in high school, the very first year.
You're aging yourself.
I know. That's how far back I go. I want to thank, of course, Mr. David Gascon for providing all the updates there.
Despite his good resume, Drew Brees all of 9-9 in postseason play.
That is correct.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's not like I think they've wasted this roster for many years.
Who had a better career, Drew Brees or Brett Favre?
Favre.
There it is.
He won three MVPs.
He did win three MVPs.
Drew was close 2018, right? And Mahomes got it instead.
He was twice the offensive player of the year, but he never won an MVP. In fact, what's interesting is Aaron Rodgers has won two MVPs and never been the offensive player of the year. Separate awards, really separate awards. And Lita Lapp, of course, who is Mr. Packer? Do you have any questions, Lee, about your Packers winning tomorrow? Any at all?
Oh, I'm nervous, but excited. A little nervous.
Well,
just because of the game earlier this season, really.
He is going to be in full gear, I guarantee you, tomorrow, Jeff, for he is a lifelong Packer man.
Thank goodness the game is before my shift tomorrow, but I will still be wearing the gear. You'll see it.
By the way, go ahead.
I told you, I once was on the radio watching the Chiefs play the Titans in that playoff game that they lost up 21-3. I had to do the show. I was lead hosting a radio show on a different network during the middle of the game. It was absolutely brutal. And I told him, I was like, can I be emotional? Like, yes, please be emotional. So I'd be like watching the game, be like, oh, no, like just like moaning and groaning while I'm trying to lead host a show.
No, believe me, I've been there. UCLA basketball, being a Bruin, trying to do a broadcast during an NCAA tournament game. Don't forget it. I'm sorry. I am not there. I'm not on the air. I'm watching every shot. I'm dying with every shot. Like, they go down 2-0. It's over. It's over. I mean, all right, so let's get back. You made it clear you're in for the Packers. From the NFC side, you were waffling a little bit earlier about this AFC championship game. So when you look into the Jeff Schwartz crystal ball, who comes out on top tomorrow?
Well, I think the Chiefs win still. I just think if you're looking for the upset, it's in that game. But I still would go with the Chiefs. Their pedigree, their ability to come from behind. I mean, you have to be up two scores with 2 minutes left, or the Chiefs are going down and scoring a touchdown. Like, there's no doubt about it. So, to me, very much around the Chiefs and Packers, mm-hmm. and we'll have an incredible Super Bowl.
We will. And like I said, what makes this year's conference championship games unique, that even if it's Bucks-Bills, it's not like a stunning upset. It's just not. I mean, we don't have some double-digit dog going into these conference championship games. But Packers-Chiefs, going back to Super Bowl I, you know how that works. So many times, I've covered 26 Super Bowls where I've been there on site covering these games.
Yeah.
And it always seems like I can, when I get there, it's like, oh yeah, this makes sense. This matchup, when it's all said and done, this matchup makes sense. So to me, the one that makes the most sense, especially with State Farm, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
With Rodgers and it would make sense with that matchup. Great stuff, Jeff. Great stuff as always. We always seem to just get started.
I know. It's over, but we'll be back next week.
We will do it. For more NFL news, just keep it here on Fox Sports Radio.